Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi there, and welcome again to the Explaining History podcast. And today I want to look at the very first few days of the foundation of Lenin's Bolshevik government, where Lenin, Trotsky, Stalin and Sverdlov, a four-man group, managed to hang on to power somehow, despite their lack of knowledge of government or their lack of understanding of the workings of any departments of government, and sometimes the sheer absurdities that they visited or attempted to visit upon the still functioning government departments of the former provisional government. So today I'm reading from Stephen Kotkin's really, really detailed biography of Stalin, the first volume of that. And he starts in this section from the very beginnings of the new Bolshevik regime. I quote, "Few street celebrations that accompanied or immediately followed the October Bolshevik coup, in contrast to the giddy days during and after February to March 1917. But within a week, Lenin was posing for sculptors. And yet few thought this crazy putsch would last even before it had happened. Throughout the summer of 1917, Russia's press, nearly all across the political spectrum, had spread the idea, as Pavel Milyukov recalled in 1918, that the Bolsheviks either would decide not to seize power as they lacked hope of retaining it, or if they did seize it, they would endure only the shortest time. In very moderate circles, the latter experiment was even viewed as highly desirable, for it would cure Russia of Bolshevism forever." So there lies some interesting clues about the durability of the regime. There were those who underestimated its ability to survive, and those that assumed that once the Bolsheviks had seized power, they would be unable to wield it. They quite literally would be unable to make departments of government operate. There would be insurrections against the Bolsheviks, there would be a counter-revolution, and all the kind of mechanisms to remove a radical revolutionary party from power would kick into play. These, of course, were assumptions that were misguided. These were assumptions that were based on a kind of the normal functioning of politics, which had come to an end sometime before October 1917. There were those who assumed that if the Bolsheviks seized power, That they and the other parties of the left fight it out between one another and destroy one another and pave the way for a right-wing counter-revolution, but also the provisional government itself, what would remain of the provisional government, would be destroyed as well. So this could favour a kind of proto-fascist or authoritarian dictator of some description. However, people were surprised when the coup happened, and Lenin chose a cabinet government rather than abolishing the state itself. And the Second Congress of Soviets approved the formation of an all-Bolshevik government. And this was going to be the sticking point, the first sticking point of the new regime. Was it going to be a coalition of leftist organisations? Some Bolsheviks, namely Lev Kamenev, argued that this is what should happen. This was going to be something that Stalin would bring up with Kamenev later on during the power struggle to succeed Lenin, and it would be ammunition against him during the Stalinist show trials 20 years later. However, in 1917... the government that Lenin creates isn't the kind of government that Lenin had previously advocated, one in which essentially the state was dissolved. Lenin quickly realised that these sort of naive notions that had been the kind of ideas that revolutionaries with no experience of government tend to come up with was going to be a sort of a non-starter. When he wrote State and Revolution the following year, he was essentially essentially ending a conversation that he had had with Bukharin, Nikolai Bukharin, some years beforehand, in which Bukharin had and Lenin previously, who had agreed that the state should wither away, Lenin said, well, it should now be retained in order to bring about revolution in its fullest force, so that the state, which Lenin had always argued was a device of class-based violence, i.e. The ruling classes inflicting their violence and control and authority on the poor. Lenin said, well, this is true, it still can be that, except it is now a device for the proletariat to destroy enemy classes, and that's why we have to keep it. That's why we have to keep policemen and prison cells and courts and armies and that kind of thing. So the Council of People's Commissars, which was the cabinet-based government, was not made up of ministers, but this new revolutionary term, commissar, which was a term directly lifted from the Paris Commune, from the term commissaire, which originally comes from the Latin commissarius, which means the representatives of the people themselves, that higher authority. The provisional government had been obviously swept aside, and the provisional government had always being in provisional, meant to be short-term, and replaced with a government elected by the people. And Lenin, in his view, said that the revolutionary vanguard of the Bolshevik Party was a representative of the people. It spoke on behalf of the working classes, even if it hadn't exactly consulted them. One of the things that the Bolsheviks have in their favour is that there were a large number of Red Guards in Petrograd. The revolution by this stage, only days old, had not spread to Moscow yet. The Red Guards in Petrograd were a working class, armed members of the working class, and they were accompanied by added by mutinous soldiers who had declared for the Bolsheviks, and the sailors of the Kronstadt naval base who had also declared for the Bolsheviks. And the top brass of the army had kind of melted away. They were had been either imprisoned by the provisional government or seized by the revolutionaries, by the Bolsheviks, or they had given up in despair and gone into exile, you know, vanished. knowing that they could no longer control their men. So this is the one card in Petrograd that the Bolsheviks have to play. They have they have an overall control of military force. The regime consisted of four individuals: Lenin, Trotsky, Sverdlov, and Stalin. All of whom had been political exiles and political prisoners, and none had any experience of government. So they had no administrative experience, they didn't know how government worked, and they didn't think that that was particularly necessary anyway. Interestingly, that Stalin himself becomes an expert bureaucrat in the next over the next few years. The 15 members of the Council of People's Commissars had, between them, spent two centuries in Tsarist prison and in exile. And in the Smolny Institute, where the Bolsheviks and the left social revolutionaries had taken over, which had been a finishing school for noble girls, they camped out and turned it essentially into an armed centre of revolution. And it was here that the October Revolution and the immediate aftermath was managed from. The whole experience of the Smolny Institute, the whole process of developing the Smolny Institute into a Bolshevik centre, has the element of kind of farce to it. The old headmistress was actually still living upstairs from Lenin's office. And Sverdlov appointed one of the Kronstadt sailors as the commandant of the institute, and it was surrounded very quickly by soldiers, and room by room, non-Bolsheviks, those who were seen as class enemies, were evicted. Lenin managed to seize a kind of a large, grand limousine-style vehicle, a Turkar Mary, which had formerly belonged to the Tsar, and it had been confiscated. This gives you an indication of the anarchy in St. Petersburg at the time. It was confiscated by the Bolsheviks from firemen who had also appropriated it and were going to drive it to Finland to sell it. Nadezhda Krupskaya, Lenin's wife, said, "Nobody knew Lenin's face at that time. In the evening, we would often stroll around the Smolny, and nobody would ever recognise him because there were no portraits there." In another incident recorded in Robert Service's biography of Lenin, Lenin was stopped in the street by armed robbers when he was driving around or being driven around Petrograd. Gunmen hijacked, stuck the car up, and he had to explain that he essentially ran the country to them. But they didn't really take that one very seriously or believe him. And it shows you that the regime at this point was fatally weak. You can barely even call it a regime at all.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
The Bolsheviks become a regime in their own right, really as a result of the Civil War. At this point, nobody recognises their validity. The Commissars set up offices inside the Smolny Institute, and they tried to assert their authority over government ministries. So they would literally visit the government ministry buildings around Petrograd, and initially had very little success. Stalin was the minister, the commissar for nationalities, but he had no ministry to actually take over because there hadn't been a minister for Russian nationalities before this point. His deputy, Stanislav Petrovsky, who was a Polish Bolshevik, that had seized control of the telegraph station during the October Revolution, found an empty table at the Smolny Institute, and on which he stuck a sign saying, "This is the People's Commissariat for Nationalities." And that was the beginning of Stalin's government ministry, a table. Stalin's office, when he eventually got one, was next to Lenin's, and Lenin would call Stalin in endlessly to discuss things informally with him. Lenin seems to have preferred to remain kind of slightly incognito behind the scenes, and he offered the chairmanship of the new Council of People's Commissars, the Sovnarkom, to Trotsky, who turned it down. Trotsky became the Commissar for Foreign Affairs and gained a room within the Smolny, which had been the quarters of the former floor mistress for the girls. And Sverdlov continued to manage the Bolshevik party itself. So this was the world's most powerful dictatorship. This was the beginnings of the longest and most successful, for want of a better word, dictatorial regime of the 20th century. And what strikes you right from the get-go is the sheer absurdity of this. Lenin had been little other in his revolutionary life than a kind of an agitator, someone that wrote revolutionary books and pamphlets, who presented obscurantist economic theses as to the crises of Tsarism and capitalism, and for whom the First World War and the destruction of the Tsarist state presents him, and then the inability to create anything meaningful afterwards, presented Lenin with an opportunity to cement himself as a dictator. But this is a dictatorship, really, really in all the very embryonic stages. If you look at the way in which the Nazi dictatorship formed after January 1933, I think the difference is that Hitler is essentially welcomed into power, or if not guided into power, by pre-existing structures of power, pre-existing processes of appointing a chancellor. And most people at the time, particularly the likes of Hindenburg, had every suspicion that a dictatorship might come about. Here was a coup that was carried out and was barely recognised as being such. The people of Petrograd, the day after the October Revolution, didn't really register that anything particularly important had happened. The level of chaos and unrest of the October Revolution was nothing kind of out of proportion with the sorts of things that had been happening since February. But politics is kind of a game of catch-up, really. The fundamental shifts and changes happen in the world, and then it takes a little while for everyone else to register the significance of what has actually occurred. And it's at that point, normally, that there is some kind of reaction or acceptance. Trotsky, too, was a journalist. He turned out to be surprisingly effective during the Russian Civil War as a military commander, but he had little training in statecraft, in fact, none, and he was able to be... He was an orator and not much more. Both Sverdlov and Stalin had been political organisers, bordering on the criminal in Sverdlov's case, but again, not policymakers, no idea of how to interact with, say, bureaucrats or civil servants, and no idea how to turn policy ideas into concrete action on the ground. They did what people with revolutionary political education invariably tend to do, and issued decrees. They abolished social hierarchy in law, civil ranks and courts. They declared social insurance for all wage workers without exception, as well as for the city and the village poor. And Stephen Kotkin writes, announcing the formation of a Supreme Council of the Economy and a determination to enforce a state monopoly in grain and agricultural implements. The decrees were suffused with terminology like the modes of production, class enemies, world imperialism and proletarian revolution. Published under the name Vladimir Ulyanov Lenin and signed for him by Stalin, among others, the decrees were proclaimed to have the full force of law. In the meantime, the regime had no finances or functionaries. Trotsky failed in multiple efforts to take over the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, Building and Personnel. His first arrival there at Palace Square 6 on November the 9th was greeted with derision, followed by mass desertion. True, his minions eventually found some petty cash in the ministry's safe, and Stalin, to fund his own commissariat, had Pestovsky sponge 3,000 rubles from Trotsky. Peskovsky soon let on that he had studied some economics in London and was decreed head of the state bank. So once again, we have a kind of a conundrum here. How did this kind of level of absurdity and amateurism manage to cement itself into a powerful and ruthless dictatorship? Where initially all it had was decrees on paper, no money, no civil service, and no credibility with any of the other organs of state, no democratic legitimacy. And the answer, of course, is through revolutionary terror. And this was very quickly the solution that Lenin would find. And within days, the discussion shifted to dealing with the question of class enemies and using terror to reinforce the regime. The thing that the regime does have, the hand it does have to play, is that of state violence in Petrograd particularly. And within days, the revolution would spread to Moscow. The revolution itself, the October Revolution, showed how far political authority had simply collapsed in Russia. Not only had the Tsarist regime in February withered away, but also the provisional government had ceased functioning. There is that old maxim, I think by Isaac Deutscher, but I might stand corrected, that the Bolsheviks didn't so much seize power as found it lying around. Well, Stephen Kotkin kind of finishes off that thought, because the idea that the Bolsheviks in the first few days of their regime have power at all is clearly not concomitant with the facts. What it appears is that there was almost an inability for anyone to wield power in the chaos of October to November 1917. Now, these situations in revolutionary societies rarely last, because ultimately somebody, and this is something, some deep-seated human need, the societies invariably kind of recreate hierarchies, that somebody needs to be in charge, somebody needs to be running things. and the inability of perhaps anybody else to offer some kind of clear leadership presents opportunities for the Bolsheviks in the end. Now, there's more to say on this topic, and I think this will be a discussion for another time. But the other element of this is how the other parties of the revolutionary left were dispatched, how they were got rid of. Initially, it was decided by Lenin, overruling other more moderate Bolsheviks, that there would be no cooperation with other revolutionary parties, even those with socialist views. Overall, the population had moved to the left, so there was little chance of right-wing monarchist or restorationist or kind of liberal democratic capitalist parties from being able to have any kind of legitimacy at all. But simply because the population moved to the left, that doesn't mean to say that the Bolsheviks themselves would have popular legitimacy. And the Civil War shows that in wide swathes of Russia that they didn't do. But we will come on to that in due course. Anyway, I hope you found this useful and informative, and do catch us on the Explaining History podcast Facebook group. It's always good to meet up, say hi, have a chat, all that kind of business. And I'll speak to you on the next Explaining History podcast. Thanks very much. Bye-bye.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.